TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Professor Jeffrey Sachs on How We Can Make Peace with Russia by Learning from John F. Kennedy. The Community Church of Boston celebrated the 60th anniversary of Kennedy's speech on world peace in June 2023. They invited Professor Jeffrey Sachs to speak to the congregation. Sachs wrote a book on the American University speech entitled To Move the World, JFK's Quest for Peace. Jeffrey Sachs is an economist, academic, public policy analyst, and director of the Center for Sustainable Development at Columbia University. Working for peace is the mission of the Boston Community Church, and they watched a documentary of Kennedy's speech on world peace and then gathered to talk with Professor Sachs.
It is one of the greatest speeches of modern history and one of the most pertinent speeches for us today, for our very survival, because we are right now, again, at the brink of nuclear war. And those who say that we are not don't understand the world that we live in, don't understand the dangers that we face, don't understand the path of escalation in Ukraine, which has been a path of bluff and then counter-bluff and then escalation and counter-escalation, not for the year plus since Russia's invasion on February 24th, 2022 took place, but for more than 30 years. I've seen at least some of it with my own eyes because I was an advisor to the economic team of President Mikhail Gorbachev. I was an advisor to President Boris Yeltsin. I was an advisor to President Leonid Kuchma, the first president of independent Ukraine. And I remember those days, and I've watched how, I'm sad to say, United States policies have wrecked the hopes of those days and put us on a path that now is causing shocking and shockingly dangerous devastation in Ukraine. Now, let me describe just a bit about the historical context of this speech. President Kennedy, in my view, was one of the great statesmen of the modern age. But the presidency is a very hard job. And President Kennedy came in fully committed to maintaining the peace. And yet, because of the nature of U.S. politics and U.S. governance, and because of the nature of the Cold War in those days, nearly stumbled into nuclear annihilation. Because that threat is hovering over the world in the modern time, and we don't eliminate it by closing our eyes. So President Kennedy came into office, of course, on January 20th, 1961, and gave one of the marvelous inaugural addresses that we remember to this day. And one of the messages in the inaugural address was, let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. So President Kennedy came in determined to find a way to peace at the height of the Cold War. But the tensions were enormous at that time. One was the general context of the Cold War itself, which is that there never was a peace agreement after World War II, after Nazi Germany's unconditional surrender in May 1945, there was never a peace agreement or peace framework agreed. And what that meant was that the status of Germany was never determined. Germany in 1945 was occupied by the four victorious powers, the United States, Britain, France, and the Soviet Union. Those four powers divided Germany and they divided Berlin. The United States decided soon after the end of the war that Germany should be remilitarized. This was shocking to the Soviet Union, which had lost more than 20 million citizens to Nazi war making. And the Soviet Union was aiming for demilitarization of Germany or neutrality of Germany, but the United States decided that Germany would be remilitarized and would be the bulwark of a new US-led military alliance, NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. This was never accepted by the Soviet Union, which pressed for some kind of resolution that would directly address Soviet security concerns. In 1955, just as a point of background, the Soviet Union, which was occupying part of Austria, agreed to withdraw its troops from the occupying zones of Austria in return for Austria's declaration of neutrality. And the Soviet leadership wanted to show to the United States and to the so-called Western world or the NATO countries that if Germany would be neutral rather than a NATO militarized country, the Soviet Union would withdraw not only from East Germany, but presumably from Central and Eastern Europe as well, because its security concerns would have been addressed. The United States would have nothing of it, however. Austria proved over the succeeding decades that neutrality was a marvelous solution for Austria. At the end of the 1950s, the German leader, Chancellor Adenauer, started to seek nuclear weapons. And Eisenhower was not really against that. And so there was talk about expanded access to nuclear weapons. The Soviet Union leadership was horrified. I could go on at length and should, if we had the time, to explain why by the time President Kennedy came into office, we were at the height of the Cold War. Soviet fears over a nuclear Germany, unsolved German issues, and rising tensions. In 1959-60, Fidel Castro also succeeded in toppling the US-backed dictatorship of Batista in Cuba and established a revolutionary government. The United States immediately began plans to overthrow Castro, and Castro appealed for security to the Soviet Union. When we say, our leaders say today, any country can choose any allies, this is not exactly how Eisenhower regarded Castro's approach to the Soviet Union. Eisenhower gave the order to the CIA to devise a plan to overthrow Castro. And that plan landed on President Kennedy's desk in early 1961. That, of course, was the so-called Bay of Pigs invasion. President Kennedy was extremely wary and skeptical of this plan. But as a new president, he was not in a position, he felt, to countermand a plan that was in the works, that had landed on his desk, and where the CIA was pressing extraordinarily hard for this. The Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba by the United States was a massive debacle. Nikita Khrushchev wrote in a back channel to Kennedy, President Kennedy, there is a illegal piratical act being carried out by your government. President Kennedy unwisely responded by saying, this has nothing to do with us. This is not our affair. Nikita Khrushchev wrote back and said, don't lie again. The United States lied twice to the Soviet Union on matters of fundamental significance within a very short period of time. This was followed by the Berlin Wall going up in the summer of 61. And of course, Khrushchev's decision, extraordinarily unwise, reckless, to put offensive nuclear weapons into Cuba. Khrushchev was aiming not at war. He was aiming at showing the U.S. a taste of its own medicine. The U.S. had nuclear weapons in Turkey, near to the Soviet Union. The U.S. had invaded Cuba. The U.S. had not listened to Soviet concerns over a nuclear Germany. Khrushchev aimed to make a point. What a terrible way to do it. Because of course, when the shipments of these missiles and their placement in Cuba was discovered by U-2 flights over Cuba in October 1962, they nearly led to full-scale nuclear war. A point that I think is extremely important to appreciate is that almost every advisor of President Kennedy in the early days of the Cuban Missile Crisis said to attack. Kennedy decided on a diplomatic approach. And it was Kennedy's diplomatic approach and fundamentally a compromise where the U.S. withdrew its missiles from Turkey and the Soviet Union withdrew its missiles from Cuba, and the United States pledged never again to invade Cuba, that the Cuban Missile Crisis was brought to an end. Or I should say nearly so, because there's one more thing to know. After Kennedy and Khrushchev agreed on unwinding the crisis, after a disabled Soviet submarine thought that it was being attacked by U.S. Navy pilots dropping depth charges and live grenades, apparently, on the submarine. And the captain of the submarine ordered the firing of a nuclear-tipped torpedo. Under U.S. military doctrine of that day, October 27th, 1962, had that nuclear-tipped torpedo been fired, it was the doctrine of the United States, championed by reckless generals such as Curtis LeMay, that the U.S. would unleash a full, unconstrained nuclear attack against the Soviet Union and all countries deemed by the United States to be in the Soviet camp, meaning Central and Eastern Europe and China. The estimates of the Pentagon were that such a full-scale attack would have killed 700 million people. That was the U.S. plan. Found out later from Carl Sagan and other scientists that it would have killed all of humanity by creating a nuclear winter. When the captain ordered the nuclear torpedo to be fired, the order was countermanded by the commodore of the squadron, by the person who saved the world that you never heard of, Vasily Arkhipov, who said, no, we will surface, we will not fire. This event for me illustrates, epitomizes our fate. We are subject to self-made annihilation by accident, by mistake, by insanity, by cruelty, by miscalculation, by calculation. And we don't understand it to this day, how dangerous and reckless our own actions are. So, in the aftermath of all of this, Kennedy, who came into office to be a peacemaker, embarked on one of the greatest acts of statesmanship in modern history. And the final year of Kennedy's life was a year of miracles. He led the peaceful end of the Cuban Missile Crisis. He and Khrushchev wrote to each other, and Khrushchev was also a man of peace. They wrote to each other saying, we must pull back from the brink. We cannot go on this way. And Kennedy embarked on a year of peacemaking that was a mix of vision, political genius, and statesmanship of the highest order. Because making peace at the height of the Cold War, in the immediate aftermath of the Cuban Missile Crisis, required a deftness and skill and bravery that is almost unimaginable. This speech that we just listened to on June 10, 1963, was part of that peace campaign. He humanizes the other side, exactly the opposite of what we get every day from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, our so-called mainstream media, with their warmongers, their reckless reporters, their desire to humiliate the other side. Kennedy aimed to humanize the other side. When Nikita Khrushchev read the speech the next day, June 11, 1963, he called the U.S. envoy, President Kennedy's envoy to Russia, Averell Harriman, and told Averell Harriman, I want to make peace with your president. And within 5 weeks, the two parties signed the Partial Nuclear Test Ban Treaty. 5 weeks later, President Kennedy then took the peace campaign to the American people, because the generals, the military industrial complex, was either passively aggressively opposed to this kind of peacemaking. President Kennedy went out to the West and gave speeches. The American people rallied to the cause of peace. And when the vote in the US Senate came, it was 80-19 in favor of ratification. President Kennedy's last great speech to the world was to celebrate this achievement, this treaty, when President Kennedy spoke to world leaders at the United Nations General Assembly in September 1963, just weeks before his assassination. And then President Kennedy looked out to the world leaders and said, fellow citizens of the world, let us take our stand at this time and in this place to see if we can help move the world toward peace. And of course he did, and then was killed a few weeks later. Many people, including myself, believe that it was because of his peace initiative, probably rogue elements of the US government, perhaps the CIA and others. Of course, we don't know for sure. But in any event, President Kennedy had achieved the ultimate in global statesmanship and in peacemaking. And as the Beatitude says, blessed are the peacemakers. Well, what President Kennedy taught us about making peace in that speech is absolutely directly relevant for us today. First, he said, do not dehumanize or denigrate the other side. They are human beings. They want peace the same way we do. He said, communicate. And I keep hoping. President Biden, pick up the phone, send a Zoom link, talk to your counterpart, talk to Vladimir Putin. Stop the sound bites. Stop the finger pointing, because those of us who know the whole history of this conflict, which goes back more than 30 years, know how many times the United States has provoked this war. Pick up the phone and negotiate. And President Kennedy said words that are so relevant that I want to remind us. He said, above all, in other words, the most important message, above all, while defending our own vital interests, nuclear powers must avert those confrontations which bring an adversary to a choice of either a humiliating retreat or a nuclear war. To adopt that kind of course in the nuclear age would be evidence only of the bankruptcy of our policy or of a collective death wish for the world. It is so obvious to any experienced person in this, and I've watched this personally for more than 30 years close up, that there is no military route to Ukraine's security, because if we were to put Russia in the choice of a humiliating defeat or nuclear war, for example, the conquest by force over Crimea, rather than negotiating, we will do exactly what President Kennedy tells us would be a death wish for humanity. President Obama understood this in 2014. Even though President Obama unwisely, very unwisely, and Hillary Clinton very unwisely, and Victoria Nuland directly when she was Assistant Secretary of State, participated in the violent overthrow of the Ukraine president. President Obama knew, do not put this onto a path of war, because he said at the time, Russia has escalatory dominance, meaning that if we escalate, they will escalate. If we escalate, they will escalate. And because the issues facing Russia are perceived by Russia to be fundamental to Russia's national security, and that is the opposition to having a U.S.-led military alliance expand to the 2,000-kilometer border with Russia, that Russia would escalate to nuclear arms if necessary. So Obama was smart not to start on that path. But ladies and gentlemen, we are on that path now, because President Biden, Victoria Nuland, who was promoted from her role in the overthrow of Yanukovych to being Under Secretary of State, Jake Sullivan, who was part of that story, who is now not the National Security Advisor to the Vice President, but the National Security Advisor to the President of the United States, have been on the path of pushing NATO enlargement, irrespective of reckless risk, irrespective of Russian red lines. Even last week, the Washington Post ran a story which was shocking, but in our benumbed media environment, passed without notice. The story said Biden more and more ignores Russia's red lines. And then reckless voices of the military-industrial complex were quoted as saying, yes, that's bluff, that's bluff, they keep going, rather than we get closer and closer to nuclear war. So this is where President Kennedy's speech is of fundamental and inestimable value to us today. For more than 30 years, the United States has pressed relentlessly an idea of expanding NATO in order to surround Russia in the Black Sea region. The whole idea was to bring Ukraine and Georgia into NATO so that there would be a ring surrounding Russia, including Ukraine, Romania, Bulgaria, Turkey, and Georgia. This was spelled out already in the late 1990s, and apparently it was on the planning books, from what I'm told by historians, already in 1992. And now we are at war, and we are a deep threat, and we have not seen peacemaking. We haven't even seen communication. All we know about diplomacy is that at the end of 2021, when President Putin put on the table a draft U.S.-Russia security agreement based on NATO non-enlargement, the United States said that is non-negotiable. It's none of your business where NATO goes. Then in March 2022, a few weeks after the Russian invasion, but mind you, 8 years after the real start of the war with the violent overthrow of Yanukovych, but a few weeks after the February 24th invasion, Russia and Ukraine were at the negotiating table, with Turkey being mediator, and they were close to an agreement based on Ukraine's neutrality, and the United States blocked it. So until today, the United States has done the opposite of never fear to negotiate. Thank you very much for bringing us together to heed the wisdom of President Kennedy. His wisdom can keep the world alive and safe, and we need to act on it. Thank you very much.
That was Professor Jeffrey Sachs. He spoke to the congregation of the Boston Community Church on June 10, 2023. They celebrated the 60th anniversary of Kennedy's speech on world peace. Sachs is an economist, academic, and public policy analyst. He's president of the United Nations Sustainable Solutions Network and an SDG advocate for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Thanks to the Community Church of Boston for the excerpts of their meeting with Jeffrey Sachs. You can find the full two-hour Zoom recording on YouTube under the title Professor Jeffrey Sachs on How We Can Make Peace with Russia. That includes a lively Q&A session, and it all ends with a performance of a beautiful piece of choral music composed to the words from JFK's speech on peace. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gilardin. Thank you for listening.